Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 427. I'm Brian Cohen, the author of Self-Publishing and Email Marketing, joined by Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Brian. I actually do feel good today. I feel very renewed. I had a renewal of motivation.
That's
last
good.
Night. And so, yeah, we're cruising. It took a 2-day migraine, but we're cruising now.
You know, the always darkest before the dawn quote is helpful at times like this.
Dark night of the soul.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
That was the fourth Batman, right?
Yeah. The dark night of the soul.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry you had a 2-day migraine. I'm glad
that's all right.
Recovered your motivation, though.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to kind of hit that bottom and be like, okay, no, I'm like, this is not good. So thanks, body.
Empty the full tank. But the body does clue us in to those times where we need renewal and we need to get back to it. So you got those 2 days of migraine rest.
Yeah. The best kind of rest.
Best kind. There's no better. Unfortunately for you, but fortunately for me, the last couple of days I was at a wonderful conference, a romance conference, Lust in the Low Country, which was a lot of fun, and spoke there. And I was in Charleston, South Carolina, and brought my wife and daughter along. And all three of us just had a great time. We were sleeping in like, whoa.
Ooh.
Like we were crashing at 9. And then I still got up at my normal time, which is around 5:36. But that was still like so much more sleep than I usually get. 2 nights in a row. And then the girls were asleep till like 7. And so I'm like, doo-doo-doo. And it's just amazing to that we all collectively got more sleep. And now I feel pretty good here coming out of that.
Happy family.
Happy family, happy everything. So
yeah.
And so in the meantime, we have my big announcement, which is that the Self-Publishing and Email Marketing book and Kickstarter is now live. So I'm glad I got that recovery period, because everybody knows that Kickstarters take a lot of energy. And it's funny, we're recording this before the Kickstarter. So I can say things like, I'm so amazed by the number of people who've, I don't know. And then I get struck by lightning and who knows what happens. But hopefully by this point at Kickstarter, which is at kickyouremail.com, that many people have contributed. And if you are just finding out about it, you can go over and pick up a book and a bunch of courses and workbooks and tutorials that are the various funding levels, the various rewards between now and June 30th. And I'm very excited about this couple of weeks.
Yeah. Good luck. Don't get struck by lightning, I guess.
I know. Well, I was planning on walking outside a lot. So
yeah, careful what you manifest, Brian.
I know. No manifesting that. I'll manifest good Kickstarter things. So Claire, with your renewed motivation, what are you working on?
Well, I'm working on my own Kickstarter this week. Yeah. So I'm just putting together all the marketing stuff, scheduling it ahead of time so that I don't have to do it every day, because I'm not good at everyday tasks. I don't do them. So this is how we fix it. But yeah, so that is for my Reclaim Your Author Career book, which is all about using Enneagram and fiction to build your author career. So that is at kickffs.com if you want to go follow. It's not live yet. Go back on Brian's. Mine will be live after his is completed on July 5th. So
we could say that we scheduled that.
We could say that. Yeah. Yeah, one could say, and one would be lying.
One would be lying.
So So yeah, but if you guys want to go to kickffs.com, you can follow the project and you can get notified as soon as it's live.
Sounds amazing. Awesome. Definitely everybody go check that out. All right. We got a question of the week, which was, what spell check software have you used? How do you use it? When in the editing process do you use it? Scott Jones said, by far the best I found after doing some head-to-head testing a bit ago. Pro Writing Aid, after doing some head-to-head testing a bit ago, worth the lifetime premium cost, even without the regular discounts that they run.
All right. And then Darren Sapp said, I write in Google Docs with the Grammarly plugin, so it happens as I write. Same for email and social media posting. I prefer Google Docs because it saves as I write. I can jump on my phone and add or edit. It's easy for collaborative writing, etc. As I finish chapters, I download to Word and run that editor and the stronger Grammarly version.
Oh, that's interesting. So the Grammarly plugin might be a little like lower key than the Grammarly desktop edition. That's good to know. That's really good to know. And Scott Burton has said Grammarly for the last book, Pro Writing Aid now, because it's integrated with Atticus. I use it after I've had betas give feedback on a near final draft. No sense doing copy edits when big chunks could be cut or changed. I'm actually the same way. If I'm going to have a beta reader, or you might even consider it an alpha reader, I'm not going to fix stuff yet.
Right. Yeah. You don't need to be. It's like trying to tidy up before you're about to do a big renovation. You know, it's like, we don't need
There's
to clean
gonna
the
be
baseboards.
A lot of dust.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot.
We don't need to do the baseboards yet. Yeah.
Agreed. Agreed. Good stuff. And you can always answer the question of the week over at the Sell More Book Show After Party, which now has 1,000 members.
1,000 members. Wow.
Amazing.
It is quite a party.
Yeah. A party after the party.
Yeah. It is quite an after party.
Yes.
Someone's going to call the cops. It's getting too loud.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of people in this neighborhood. Who might
yeah, we'll
that.
Get Patrick. We'll call Patrick O'Donnell. Get him on there.
Exactly. All right. Let's go into the tips. And you're up first. Here we go.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Ultimate Audio. Audiobooks are big business, but they can be even bigger if you write your books with audio in mind, says Jules Horn for the Alliance of Independent Authors. What exactly does writing for audio mean? And how do you do it? Quote, many fiction writers don't realize that when they get into audio, they're becoming a radio writer, says Horn. And they need to learn some craft techniques if they're going to make the most of their huge investment in audio production. A manuscript edited with audio in mind will really sparkle and stand out, end quote. Character dialogue is one area to focus on, but don't neglect your prose. Shorter, clearer sentences are easier for readers to follow and easier for your narrator to deliver without taking an awkward breath. The use of complicated sentences with M dashes and brackets can be hard to keep up with while listening. Other culprits of complication are advanced use of tense, such as past perfect. Phrases like, he had been down in the kitchen when he heard her rummaging around in the drawer, are hard enough in print, but when spoken, it can cause mental backflips. To help authors master the audiobook, Ally has created, you guessed it, the ultimate guide to writing for audio, which yes. contains all the tips and tricks you need to help you master writing with audio in mind.
Yes. Yes.
Guide.
Ally.
Guide. Guide.
Guide. Guide. It's so funny thinking about it. Here we are, episode 427 of a show where we are reading things out loud every single week. And I think that even just being a co-host of this show for 8 years has taught me a lot about the sort of sentences that can trip you up when it comes to audio and needing that simplicity. It's a little bit of copywriting. It's a specific medium where your words are going to be spoken aloud. And I've learned my lesson. I did the audiobook for self-publishing with Amazon Ads, and I caught some things. The book was already out. It was out there, ebook and print. I learned some things that now, if I do an audiobook for the next book, it will be read first prior to the ebook going out so that these kinds of things can be caught.
That's smart. I'm going to do that for my Reclaim Your Author career, because I will be doing that audiobook myself. And it's nice. The first audiobook I've done. And I know I love me an M-dash.
Ooh,
I love it.
Feels good. Makes you feel warm inside.
Pack all that information in there. All the side notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, going back to this, I think that we need to realize if we have a book that we're definitely going to do audio for, even if it's just telling our editor, we need simplicity. If there's anything too complicated that's going to take three breaths to get through, please make a note of it, because I'm going to get rid of that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I mean, it hurts my heart, because I love, there's nothing wrong with long sentences in print. No. No. As long as you can follow along with them, which, you know, then you're good. But yeah, if you're going to go into audio, it can get a little bit messy, a little bit serpentine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of Johnny Cash. It's like, well, we played that slow because we couldn't play faster, is what they said. And it's the same sort of deal. Well, if I can't write sentences that are that complicated, then I'll just keep them simple so they're good for the audio edition.
Yeah, totally.
All right. And definitely go check out that guide. Mm-hmm. And let's go into the second tip. Think before you jump. Writers love jumping genres, but when you're already established, putting out a new book in a new genre requires flexibility, patience, and planning, says Greer McAllister for Writer Unboxed. Quote, if you're an author with an established readership in one genre looking to publish in another, here are three things to look out for, end quote. First, don't underestimate the extra time it might take to write. Quote, maybe if you're shifting between subgenres, this might not be an issue, writes McAllister, but making the move from writing historical fiction to epic fantasy could be like learning to write almost from the ground up. And that's just the writing. If you have people, you might need to help them along or find new beta readers, editors, and cover designers. We know that not all readers will follow, but there are others to consider too. Quote, the same applies to the rest of your network, McAllister says. I found that authors who would be glad to blurb my historical fiction might not have any interest in fantasy, end quote. Likewise, bookstores and libraries might be happy to host for one genre, but not your new one. Quote, don't be afraid to change, but recognize that the scope of that change might be even more daunting than you first realize. So, Claire, you have written in multiple genres under different pen names. Does this relate to some of the trials and tribulations you had upon switching?
It feels a little bit like a direct attack. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
yeah, it really is. Like, these are all things to consider. And it's not just writing in a new genre, especially if you get a new pen name. It's creating a new business, is the way I think of it. It just takes so much more work than you think it's going to take, which is fine if you have the time, if you're not, you know, stressed for money. Mm-hmm. And it takes an initial investment cost of moving over. You know, you're probably going to need to find some new beta readers. Like it said, mm-hmm. you're going to need to find just new readers. You're going to have to do a lot more advertising up front because you don't have an established readership. So you need to find all these new people for each book. You might need to find a new editor, which is always tricky. It is. A new cover designer. You're going to have to, you know, because cover designers aren't good at every genre. So you want to find one that works for you. So there's just a lot. It's just starting over in a lot of ways. Your writing, you know, skills are still there, but like this says, it is so different writing in different genres. You have to really transition yourself over. I struggle sometimes to go between, you know, humor and crime fiction, or even cozy mystery that's really clean, and then crime fiction where I'm like, should the body be nude or not? I can't remember, you know, like, is this too much for the genre? I can't remember. So yeah, that was actually a thing that I was having to discuss with some people recently. And yeah, so there's a lot to take into consideration. Although, you know, some people really have to write in different genres to keep themselves interested. So it's not a no-go.
Yeah, you have to remember that. It's not, there's never anything we say that's 100% all the time for every person, because you have to get excited. I'm not a multiple genres person, but I need to have multiple projects to stay invested. And so absolutely, these are considerations you need to make. Mm-hmm. So definitely check this out. There's no ally guide on it, but it would still be worth checking out the post. All right. Tip number three is over to you.
Patterson on Patterson. James Patterson is one of the most prolific authors and co-authors in the world. And the secret to his success is simple. Quote, Patterson's approach to writing is unapologetically pragmatic, writes Mark Athatakis for The Washington Post. Quote, give them something irresistibly compelling, then give them more of it quickly, end quote. Patterson's memoir just released is the 10th book he's published so far this year, and one of four books he has slated for release in June when this episode was published. In his memoir, Patterson discusses his writing process. It's nothing fancy, he explains, and it starts with a folder stuffed with unused story ideas. Quote, when the time comes for me to consider a new novel, he writes, I'll take down the trusty dusty idea folder, end quote. While Patterson is prolific, he has a stable of co-authors helping him keep up the breakneck publishing pace. According to Patterson's website, he's written or co-written nearly 400 books, and the author insists that at the bare minimum, he's the one responsible for outlining every last one of the books. Passive Guy, who's familiar with Patterson's background in advertising, suggests that a big part of the author's success is his skills, not just in writing, but in marketing. Quote, he does a very good job of promoting himself, in part because he knows about effective advertising and publicity more than all of the marketing executives in all the publishers in New York City combined.
Oof.
That's a bold statement. A lot of
marketing knowledge.
Yeah. Bold claim, Passive Guy.
Yeah. So I think a few things to take out of here. I mean, obviously, you could call Patterson's books whatever you want. You hate them, you love them. It is what it is. Nobody has a more efficient process than his. It's just he does what now some indies are doing, but he's been doing it for like 20 plus years. And which means his backlist is one of the biggest of all time. And so I think boiling it down to give him something irresistibly compelling, then give him more of it quickly.
Easy.
Yeah. It's such a nice idea.
Why didn't I think of that?
But, and him having a trusty dusty idea folder is, you know, one thing, but really it's about his process. And I'd be interested. So if he's got a memoir that just came out, I'd be interested in reading that, hearing more about it. But you're never going to be able to copy someone's process exactly. So you do need to come up with your own. And Patterson probably works a lot and has for a long time. And that might not be the lifestyle that you want for yourself. So it's not just about money and it's not just about modeling behaviors. It's about what do I want for my life? Which, of course, is a scary question for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. And from what I understand, James Patterson wrote most of his books on his own for a while.
Right.
So he was doing that and he built up a lot of income from that. So when he hires co-writers, he's hiring really talented writers.
Yeah.
Who he can pay, which is a completely different model that, you know, from if you aren't working with a lot of money and you're just trying to earn back and you're hiring ghostwriters who don't have that experience, it's going to be harder to make that money back because the prose is going to be a little bit, you know, less compelling, or it might be. So, you know, you can look at the model he has now, but if you're trying to build your business off the model he has now, it ain't going to work.
Yeah.
Because you haven't done all the groundwork that he had. So yeah, back to your point of it's going to work differently for everyone. You can't just look at someone who has success right now and try and do exactly what they're doing from your point of, you know, starting much, much later than they have. So, I mean, you can kind of follow it up from the beginning, but the industry is so different that things just don't work the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It is true. It is true. All right. Well, and he probably does have more marketing and publicity know-how than a lot of publishers.
That helps.
And a lot of indies have a lot of knowledge in that area too. So it's all stuff worth thinking about here. Let's go into an honorable mention. I didn't want to lose this one because it's just kind of funny. All right. Y2K all over again. If you have a newly issued ISBN, you could have a problem, reports Darcy Patterson of IndieKidsBooks.com. If you're old enough to remember the Y2K scare of 1999, then this problem might seem familiar. Similar to how old computer programs didn't understand what to do when the date changed from 99 to 2000, there are computer programs out there that don't know what to do with ISBNs that begin with the prefix of 979. Quote, about 15 years ago, the 10-digit numbers that had been used since the inception of ISBN was becoming too full, writes Patterson. To alleviate this, the industry converted to 13-digit numbers, starting with 978. But since all the new numbers at that time begin with 978, they just ignored that part and recorded the last 10 digits. But now those numbers have run out, and we're starting to use ISBNs that start with 979. The problem, quote, Amazon still uses the 10-digit ISBN number, end quote. Currently, the Library of Congress doesn't understand an ISBN that begins with 979. Worse, neither does Amazon, meaning that books via Ingram using a 979 ISBN could run into ordering problems until this issue is resolved. The advice for now is to first use any remaining 978 ISBNs for your print books and let Amazon know they need to fix the issue. Thanks to Jane Friedman for the tip. So they had a system, but it was a duct tape measure, and now we ran out.
Yeah, we need 13 digits, but the first three are going to be the same, so there's only going to be a 10-digit variation that we allow. I don't know. What are you going to do?
I don't know. Did they only do 13-digit with the 978s? Maybe they can go back to 977s and do 13-digit for those. I don't know. But the nice thing is, and I just experienced this, so Amazon had been kicking back some weird ad rejections from what I could tell. And this was with some help from, actually, I think Blaine Moore pointed this out to me. I know Blaine's a listener of the show, is that Apple ads submitted from an Apple device were detecting extra carriage returns, which is indicated by a forward slash and an N. And old ads were getting rejected that said they had that you need to get rid of slash N in your ad. Now, of course, slash N wasn't actually in anybody's ad, but there could have been some extra code tomfoolery that snuck their way in there because of whatever device they were using. I was fortunate enough to have a contact at Amazon. They said, let me know if there are any people with problems. And I said, oh, we got some problems. And I did let them know. And I know other authors around the community had let them know as well. And the good news was they fixed that issue and they were able to actually resubmit probably thousands and thousands of ads that had this error. And so I know that it's not all the way solved, but for a lot of people that has been solved because Amazon was informed about it. So if anyone is experiencing this issue with a 979 ISBN, please do reach out to me. I will definitely connect with my contact about it because certainly it would be unfortunate if anyone was running into this. But ISBNs, I mean, this is not Amazon caused this issue. This sounds like the computer programs were never programmed to have a certain number of books, and now there have been that certain number of books.
It would have been such an easy thing to program too, right? Like, right. And then the digit goes up.
Mm-hmm. One would think.
They're like, that'll never happen. There'll never be that many books.
No one writes books. Nobody writes books. There won't be more books. Well, funny story aside, let's get into the top five. Hey, we haven't had an honorable mention in a while, so you get to do number five, Claire. Here we go.
It's time for the Sell More Books Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
A month of audio. If you're an author considering an audiobook, this is your month. Findaway Voices and Draft Digital are celebrating National Audiobook Month with a series of live events featuring authors who've had success with their audiobooks. Invest in your audiobook career in June by tuning in and learning from brilliant authors from multiple genres. This free webinar series is designed to help you gain valuable insight on building an author platform that enables sales of your books from ebook to print to audio. Each week, one author will discuss their craft, their newest published work, and their secrets to success running their author business so you can learn from their experience. Learn from cozy mystery author Sarah Rosette, Rita and Audi Award winner Kennedy Ryan, fantasy and sci-fi author Jamie Davis, narrative nonfiction author Eddie Rice, apocalyptic and dystopian novelist Kayla Stone, and learn how to market your audiobooks, author and indie publisher M.K. Williams. The weekly events are on Tuesday or Wednesday throughout the month, and you can join live or catch the replay using the link at findawayvoices.com/audiobookmonth2022.
I only have one issue with this. That URL is too long. Findaway, you got to be like AM22 or something like that. No, that's great. I always love Findaway and Draft to Digital, finding interesting methods to get the word out about this stuff. I know that Findaway has a big clubhouse following. They're always out there trying to teach. And I think that one of the reasons we've been running this podcast for 8 years is because an informed community is a community that is going to be able to better prosper. So, Claire, what are your thoughts on this? I know that you know, you don't have everything in audiobook. I certainly don't have everything in audiobook. Who's like the right fit for something like this where we're trying to learn this stuff?
Well, I think that this is a great thing for anyone who's trying to learn more about audiobooks, right? You have to make an informed decision. You have to understand what the market actually is to see how much you can invest to make your money back and in what time. So if you haven't done audiobooks, you definitely need to check this out. And if you have some out, and you have, you know, the rights to them and you can market them like they're not through a publisher where you don't have access to the any sort of dashboard, you should definitely check this out and get some tips. I mean, I know Sarah Rosette is really good with this sort of thing. She is sort of the queen of finding these different distribution channels for her books and finding ways to learn that channel and do really well at it. So yeah, all of these authors are very educated in this and have done well in audio. So even if you just need inspiration, I think, or a little added motivation to, you know, some fire under your butt to go market your audiobooks, this is perfect for that.
Yeah. And I think that a couple years back, even there was basically just sell more ebooks and you'll sell more audiobooks. But now I think there is a lot more. And there are more options, certainly with Findaway and those newer distribution channels. So go check it out Tuesdays or Wednesdays. Hopefully they'll be helpful for you. Awesome. Let's go into number 4.
Number 4.
A copyright danger zone. Boom, boom. Authors are often told that ideas are not only a dime a dozen, but that you can't copyright them. And of course, now the show is canceled. Now, a new lawsuit brings all of that old advice into question. On June 6th, Paramount found itself being sued to stop distribution of Maverick or Top Gun 2 by the heirs of an author of a 1983 magazine article about the Top Gun fighter program. They also asked to be awarded monetary damages, claiming that the new film is derivative of the magazine article and therefore covered under their copyright ownership. Their argument, writes Chris Lindahl of IndieWire, is that without the article, Top Gun or Top Gun Maverick would not exist. As Lindahl writes, Paramount had secured rights to the article before making Top Gun, and the author of the article even received a writing credit on the original 1986 film, despite not writing the screenplay. Entertainment lawyer Mark Litwack commented, quote, the article is not the screenplay, and Paramount can argue that the article was basically just a story idea and nothing more. Ideas are not copyrightable, end quote. Litwack suggests that the case will settle, as the long-term consequences for a case like this winning would be too dramatic to risk. I was reading about this over the weekend and hearing about this. I think that when you, like, there are lots of articles or stories from magazines and newspapers that do get optioned into movies. It happens all the time. I think there's one coming out, I forget which streaming service, but is about a couple that figured out a hack to winning the lottery and ran a whole scheme about it. And that came from an article in a newspaper, as did the old Monopoly case of Monopoly, McDonald's Monopoly getting scammed and lots of people trying to kind of cash in on that. There are definitely stories, and Top Gun being one of them that was based off of an article. Now, if I'm Paramount, I probably would have double checked.
Yeah.
That no one was going to, that, hey, Top Gun won, we paid this person X amount of money for the rights to this thing. Now, there is something interesting in all of this that isn't covered in the article. Some of this comes down to when the movie was actually officially finished. Because apparently, Paramount had the rights to the article as long as the movie was finished by the end of 2020. But as we all know, COVID pushed a lot of things. And as a result, that those rights may have expired in the midst of the COVID period. That's another thing I would have double-checked if I were Paramount, if someone was going to sue me. But it leaves you to wonder, like, if you give someone an idea and it says in your contract somewhere you have the rights to derivative future things, the company might not take that into consideration when they put other things together. I mean, this is a whole, we're not lawyers, but what do you think here on this, Claire?
I don't know. I mean, if I were Paramount, I'd just pay them right away. Like, what? Yep. Just pay them. Like, you have money, just pay them so that this doesn't become bad publicity. And, you know, if you're the person who wrote the article and you feel like you deserve money, sue them. Like, yeah, that's how it works. That's why you have it. Like,
yeah,
with the money.
Yeah.
That you wrote. Yeah. I mean, I think it is probably a matter of, like, someone didn't check something.
That's what it feels like. That's what it feels like. It's like,
because this is not really like ideas. This is, we have precedent. Like, if you write an article and it has specific characters and specific plot points and those sorts of things, and someone is like, I would like to use this, then it's not, it's no longer just an idea. It's more of like an outline, which you can, you know, sell the rights to. So yeah, this is not quite the idea territory. Not just like, what if you had a private eye who's also a bobcat enthusiast and he, you know, got lost in bobcat territory and had to solve a bobcat murder, right? Like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm like on bobcats, although it was
on the bobcats.
Yeah. It was Texas State mascot. Yep. But yeah. So, you know, that sort of thing, you say that, now someone could go and take that and write this bobcat PI story.
Right.
And now they
will.
I hope you do. Good luck. I didn't give you much to work with, but yeah. And that's an idea that's different from like writing an actual article and having the print of it out.
Yeah. Yeah. This article was published. It had Top Gun in the title, and then it was optioned as the basis for a film. Now, I don't think it had like a hot shot Tom Cruise in it or anything, but it did have this idea of the Top Gun program. And so I think Paramount's making this argument about, well, you can't copyright an idea, in part because somebody screwed up.
Yeah. So. Don't even make that argument. Just pay them.
Yeah. And they will, because Top Gun 2 has made a lot of money.
Yeah. It's doing okay.
Yeah. It's like $400 million domestically. It's going to make $1 billion. worldwide. They can afford to pay this guy $5 to $10 million, which would have been less if someone had checked it beforehand.
They should have trademarked mustaches. That would have made them a lot of money. Mustaches popping up left and right, I tell you.
Oh my gosh. That's why I have it, because of Top Gun too. All right, well, let's move into number three, and you are up. Here you go.
Number three.
What's up, Wattpad? Nearly a year after Wattpad was purchased by Korea's Naver for an estimated $600 million, Wattpad says they are growing faster than ever, reports Ed Nawaka of Publisher Weekly. The new president of Wattpad, Gene Lam, says that the company's plan to monetize its creators' content is a top priority for the company. Quote, we're now approaching having reached a total of $3 million paid back to our writers from the paid stories programs over the past 2.5 years, end quote. Lam also says that Wattpad's brand collaborations have also been a big success, with a partnership with Maybelline raising over $30,000 for mental health awareness. Users continue to rise as well, with 94 million users in North and Latin Americas, Europe, and Asia. Quote, we reached 176 million combined visitors around the world monthly across Webtoon and Wattpad, she said, with 80% of Wattpad's users classified as Gen Z. Quote, we help creators get their stories told. We want to empower writers to write what they want, engage with their readers and communities, and help them monetize their massive fandom. It is truer now more than ever before.
I clicked around just to see. So Wattpad has paid $3 million to the writers from the paid stories program over the past 2.5 years. In July 2014, Amazon paid $2.5 million to Kindle Unlimited authors. And since then, every month, they've paid more than Wattpad has paid in nearly 2.5 years. So that number doesn't feel...
It doesn't. It doesn't feel super spectacular. And a lot of these numbers don't really... Like, they are just on totally different levels, right? $600 million to grow this. $3 million going to creators. Maybelline raised $30,000, which is good. $30,000 is better than zero. But it just does not seem to be flowing back to creators.
Yeah, which... That's one point. It doesn't seem like money is going to creators. That's one point. The second point is, I mean, is Wattpad, are you okay, Wattpad? Like, I can't really tell from this. Those numbers are so weird. It's like, yes, they have traffic. And that's awesome that they have 176 million combined visitors around the world. And they have Webtoon and Wattpad. But, you know, if you can't do anything with those people, I'm interested, like, what is Wattpad's, what money are they taking? Is there anything?
They're taking in $600 million from selling the business.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's a good question. Like, it might be a good idea to try and reach out and meet some Gen Z readers if you want to be writing for the long haul. You got to keep getting younger audiences in. But Gen Z doesn't have huge purchasing power right now. And Wattpad has always been a place where the younger generation goes to get free stories. So they would have to change consumer behavior of that site, which doesn't look like it's really working.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, we've already talked about Gen Z and other, you know, not just to throw Gen Z under the bus there, but folks returning books and treating Amazon like a library when it's not. I when there already is the Kindle Unlimited program, that would be a totally better use of their time. But I do think that still, I think I even saw on the 20 Books group, someone is now having built an audience from Wattpad, has now seen some success kind of combined with Wattpad and TikTok, which is great. But the stories like that are still few and far between. And so there will be another platform, and maybe it'll even be TikTok, as I've seen that TikTok is kind of moving into potentially the idea of having books out there, or having the ability to connect directly with books. And so if we see a story related to that, rather than, you know, hearsay, we'll absolutely talk about that on the show. But someone is going to learn to monetize this demographic for readers, because someone always figures this sort of thing out, because there's money. And if there's money to be made, someone is going to try to figure it out. Once they do, we will let you know.
Right. And I mean, Gen Z doesn't have purchasing power right now because they're young. They're younger. Yeah, so
they will.
Yeah, you can get them now and use them, and just accept that might not be your most economically prosperous generation that you're appealing to, but they will come into it. They will come into more purchasing power. They will start to have, you know, higher paying jobs or jobs at all. Some of them are still very much in school. And at that point, you could have built a very long-term relationship with them. So yeah, I mean, maybe it's not the part of your strategy where you rake in the money. Right. Maybe it's a little bit like, you know, towards the start of your funnel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you don't get a sale from someone, it doesn't hurt to have an author advocate, someone who is talking about you and sharing you. These are good things.
Right.
And so it's okay if all of your readers are not people who buy your books. It's okay if some of those people are still helping you in other ways.
See if you can tap into that Wattpad to TikTok pipeline.
All right, let's move on to number two, and it's me.
Number two.
Hybrid hijinks. The Society of Authors and the Writers Guild of Great Britain have published a new report exposing widespread bad practices by companies known in the publishing industry as hybrid publishers, or those publishing companies who charge writers for publication. Hybrid publishing seems like a tempting option for authors who can't land a traditional deal, but don't want to do all the work required of an indie author. But unlike traditional publishers, hybrids don't have a consistent model. The two organizations caution authors to be careful. Quote, "Overall, the amount paid did not reflect the service delivered and the rights taken," says their report. Quote, "Many writers would have been better advised to self-publish and pay for the services they needed, such as editing or illustration work." The two writers' unions are calling for a reform of the hybrid paid for publishing sector based on a three-pronged approach, which includes a commitment to key publishing principles listed in their report, clarity when it comes to naming conventions and terminology, an agreed upon code of conduct, disclosure of author rights when entering a hybrid paid for publishing agreement, and the need to have all contracts independently vetted before signing. This is almost like the baby author solutions kind of stuff. It's like you pay to play, and there is not really a guiding organization that is saying how much these organizations are allowed to pay or require to be paid. And so some of them charge $5,000 to $10,000. And the people who stumble upon these ads or get calls, I've been getting calls about an old book until I said, don't call me anymore. Thank you. And you could tell it was very sales pitchy. These organizations will charge so much and deliver something, but not necessarily something that comes anywhere close to that amount. Claire, what came to mind when you heard about this one?
It was like, yeah, of course. That was what came to mind. We've known about this, right? Like, it's hybrid publishers are very similar to the old vanity publishers. They're just, the model doesn't make sense to me, because you really need to know your book and your business. And it takes a lot of getting to know it to be able to market it properly. And a company like this does not have enough people to individually focus on each person's brand and what they're selling and to do it effectively. And, you know, you shouldn't be paying someone for this.
Yeah.
Yes, you'll pay an editor to do that specific job. And the results are that the book should be edited and it should be pretty clean. You'll pay a cover designer to deliver you a cover that meets your standards, and then you'll pay them once you're satisfied. But this is paying before you're satisfied, before you get the result.
Yeah.
And that is, you just have no guarantee that it's actually going to work. And by the time you find out, it's too late. You've already paid. So it's, I think that's a warning sign in and of itself for authors. If someone's asking you to pay them before you get the result, and before you can make sure that you're happy with the result, then you probably shouldn't put that money there.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I think that, especially if it's a lump sum where you have multiple services all being combined together, that's one of the toughest things, is that so many folks who are not happy with what they resulted in, they have no recourse here. Mm-hmm. And so, look, I will make fun of the Society of Authors and those sorts of organizations for other things. I am glad they're looking into this. I'm glad that they're calling some stuff out. I do hope that some reforms are made so that these companies cannot get off scot-free or just change their name, as I know Author Solutions did a bunch of times. I don't know if that'll happen, but I'm glad that there's an effort being made.
And hopefully everyone who is listening to this show will be a little bit smarter about it. And if you're not sure, you can always just hop into the after party, the Sellmore Book Show after party, and say, hey, does anyone have experience with this? Is this legit? Or is this one of these sort of scammy publishers?
Yeah. Ask about it before you buy.
Definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, we're going into the number one story of the week, and it's you. Here we go.
And now the number one top five news item.
Spotty reception. Spotify has announced its plan to expand aggressively into audiobooks, including a store where you'd pay Spotify for individual titles. In a recent announcement by the Spotify CEO, Daniel Ek, he projected that the audiobook market would grow from $9 billion to $70 billion globally in the next 10 years. Quote, the takeaway here, author Michael Evans asks in his post in the 20 books to 50K Facebook group, Spotify entering the audiobook market will drive up competition for intellectual property in the audiobook space, leading to more money in the short run for authors with established readerships, end quote. While most of the IP deals will benefit already successful authors, there are potential benefits to authors at all levels of success. Quote, with podcasts already built out on Spotify, authors can use it to funnel listeners to their audiobooks, writes Evans. Serializing a first book in series as a podcast and later having audio dramas as gated content. For nonfiction, it could be even more lucrative, as podcast guests could draw in listeners who could then be directed to the relevant audiobook right there on the platform. It's still too soon to tell how all this will work, as the Spotify ecosystem is still just a vision. Quote, Spotify has a lot of pieces, but they are yet to put them together into a coherent puzzle that really makes sense for authors, end quote. For more on how this could benefit you as an author, plus the pitfalls to avoid, check out the posts and comments in 20 Books to 50K. Yes.
So $70 billion is what the, of course,
Adjusted for inflation.
Yeah, seriously. Adjusted for 900% inflation. So it'll actually be tomorrow that it's $70 billion. So I really liked this post by Michael Evans, who was sharing this in the 20 Books group, talking about, well, what does this actually mean? And it means, first, when there's more money, the very successful authors will get the first cut of it, because they're the ones who get these deals. When we saw Audible attempting to grow the industry, there were a lot of exclusive deals, like this is a Audible exclusive book, or this is an Audible exclusive podcast. One assumes that Spotify will make similar deals, a Spotify exclusive contract where it's only going to be on Spotify, which some authors and some creators might sign in order to make some money there. And so that could impact some of the other audiobook companies that are out there. But then this interesting idea of moving people from a podcast to an audiobook, this feels like something Spotify would need to create, because right now, if you're on a podcast, hey, you're listening to it, you might not even be in the Spotify app or anything. And then it's like, oh, well, just click on this thing in the Spotify app and people don't have it or whatever. So that is why I think Evans points out there's a lot of pieces, but they don't all fit together quite yet.
Yeah. I mean, they could fit together really seamlessly, and this could be a huge thing, or it could be done in a way that doesn't really help anything, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we've seen this kind of stuff. We've seen, when it came to the ebook world, we've seen Apple, Barnes & Noble, and Google have their various steps in the right direction, and then maybe steps back from where we would say they're in the right direction. Like right now, it seems like Barnes & Noble is kind of back to moving in the right direction, Google back to moving in the right direction, but nobody ever really took the share away from Amazon.
No.
So what is Spotify going to have to do to take the share away? Like, I guess we can look at the streaming industry and we can see, well, what did Disney Plus do to take share away from Netflix? Because really, that's been the big thing. It helped that Disney had a whole lot of IP and very popular current stuff like the Star Wars and Marvel movies to throw into this to get people and had a lot of exclusive movies, like they had Hamilton on there and some of the movies directly released. Could Spotify throw money at this, a similar tactic? I don't know what readers would think of as caring enough.
Right. Well, I mean, they are investing into it. They just had that Batman audio play that they did. They promoted it. They got a lot of downloads. You know, it was number one everywhere for a while on their charts. So that sort of content, I think, would help. But if they want to, they have so many subscribers that right. They could take from Audible very easily. If they're smart about it, if they have built something into the app, so, you know, on your home screen, you're listening to Spotify, but maybe it's still locked, but it kind of like half opens and it has your little Spotify player. If they could add a button that said related audiobooks underneath it, and you could link audiobooks to a given track or anything like that, then that would immediately increase the purchasing. If they do something like a Spotify premium where you can listen to audiobooks like Audible, you get credits or something like that on top of the $9.99 or whatever it is for the Audible subscription right now, that would be another thing. They have the people there and they know that everyone there is audio focused. So I think that where Apple and Google probably went a little bit off track is that selling books isn't their main priority. Right. They make money doing other things, even with Amazon. A lot of the things that just don't quite work with Amazon, there is a dedicated, you know, KDP is dedicated to it, but it's not Amazon's main revenue at this point. So, but with Spotify, audio is its revenue. Yeah. So if they can just find more ways to get people spending more time on Spotify, then that is going to increase their, you know, their profits a huge amount. And it's going to create more reader loyal or, you know, like listener loyalty. So they have more of a reason to invest in this than some of the other platforms we see. So I think that they should do it. They should go into this and they should talk to lots of fiction and nonfiction authors about what could help them sell books.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. We shall see. This is something we'll report on if there are any developments as per usual. Claire, we need a question of the week. We could go into this Spotify thing, definitely, and see what we think Spotify might do. We could go into what should we do about the ISBN problem. We could go into hopping genres. We had a lot of talk about other audiobook things. What do you want to hear about?
Let's talk about hopping genres.
Okay, cool. Any particular direction, or you want to say,
Dang, Brian? Brian, let's see what you got.
Sure. So have you written in more than one genre? And when you did you run into some of the similar issues of extra time required in order to get your ducks in a row to do that genre properly?
Okay.
Yeah, you can answer that question over at the Sell More Book Show After Party or at the Sell More Book Show website, sellmorebookshow.com for episode 427. We've got a steaming pile of potato here that is ready to deliver some wisdom. Claire, would you like to pass that or keep it?
I don't feel like I have any new wisdom this week, Brian. Mm. I've learned things, made friends along the way, but but yeah, I don't. I'm all out of wisdom. Sorry,
I feel like
guys.
You were gonna break into song right there. but I'll take it then. So, a little bit of wisdom for today. Sometimes, when work is crazy and you've got a lot of writing to do and you've got a lot of marketing to do, remember to go take a break, hang out with your family, see them, see what they're doing, be 100% in it. Because by the time you come back, these bigger world smashing publishing problems are not going to seem as wild, because in the context of, are you living your life? Are you doing the best you can? It will be a lot easier to compartmentalize what is truly important and what is just stressing you out that day.
Well said.
No, thank you. Thank you. So, not speaking from experience at all, of course. So we've got Kickstarter campaigns up the wazoo.
We do.
Claire's is coming up in July at kickffs.com. Mine is now open. You can get self-publishing and email marketing, plus a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to do a Kickstarter exclusive email challenge that only people who back the Kickstarter at a certain level will get access to tickets to Self-Publishing Live Summer 2022, my email vault. I'm opening up the vault, Claire. Opening the vault. Watch out. Here who knows comes. What's in there?
It's going to slither out of that vault.
Yeah, I know.
What great deals are going to slither out of that vault.
And that's all at kickyouremail.com. That runs through June 30th here in 2022, if you're catching up from years past. But awesome. Claire, anything else you want to share or mention here today?
Nope. Just go follow my Kickstarter, which will launch next month at kickffs.com.
Woo. Awesome. Do it. And yeah, I hope that you have a great rest of your week. For Claire, I'm Brian. Have a fantastic time selling some books. And we will be back next week for episode 428. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.